Hello and welcome, Teddy. Thank you for joining today at the Beast Comedy Club for a podcast episode.
Hi, thank you for having me. What a pleasure. What an honor. What a delight.
Let's see.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe this will actually be awful, in which case, how dare you force me to come here? This is awful. I hate this place.
So I've been doing this series about stand-up, well, creativity, and more specifically with you guys, stand-up comedians, mm-hmm. out of Basel. Yeah, and it's been very interesting so far.
Who's your favorite, and rank them all? I mean, we can both agree that Benjamin Delahaye is a problem.
I have to do one again with him in English.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's really hard for you. I'm sorry. No, I love Ben. I'm just being a dick.
Yeah, we love you, Ben. If you're a doubt, he will be listening to that, actually.
Ben, I don't love you, but I accept you as a colleague.
Because you're French.
Yeah, it's not really to do with his Frenchness. More just, I'm threatened by his charisma and humour.
That's nice.
It's very powerful.
That's a nice compliment.
Yeah. And it's height. There's only room for one tall comedian in Switzerland.
So
quite literally, there's only room for one. If we were on top of each other too much. I'm sorry, I'm going to stop doing bits. Please, do the thing.
I'm fine doing just that the whole hour.
No, it will get so annoying if I keep staying in this mode of just interrupting with weird asides. It will get very annoying very quickly. So,
do you do that in everyday life with your friends as well?
You know, less actually. Like, I used to. I think especially before comedy, I would do it a lot more. But the more I've gotten comfortable in comedy and performing there, mm-hmm. the less I feel a need to kind of be funny off stage. Mm-hmm. Like, and now when I'm doing a podcast, like, I'll admit that I go a little bit, like, turn on, you know, I go into, like, I'm aware that this is being recorded, so I'm gonna be slightly in performance mode, right? That mm-hmm. makes sense. Mm-hmm. But now, socially, I think because I can get it out of my system on stage, like, I get my attention, I get my laughs that feed my ego, then when I'm off stage, I feel way less of a need to impress or be like the center of attention. So I'm much more comfortable being quieter. I think I've gotten quieter the longer I've done comedy, like socially.
But maybe that's getting older.
Also yes, and sober, and it's definitely a part of it. But I do think there's an element of I don't feel the need to, like, show everyone who I am if I've been on stage. Because I'm kind of like, nah, that was me. And that, like, now I'm happy being in the backseat.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I notice I do it, too, in conversations. Sometimes I feel like I need to entertain, which is not true, you know, in friendships.
Mm.
So I wonder if that will change.
I mean, it's still something that's a big part of my life and in, like, relationships and stuff, you know. I don't know how in-depth I would get about that, but like, I still feel the need to... I still can find it quite hard to not be in performance mode if I'm trying to make sure someone's happy. Like, my go-to, if someone's having a bad time, is to try and entertain them, which is not always what they want. And it took me a long time and a lot of failures to understand that sometimes it's not about, you know, sometimes you can't cheer someone up.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's just like being present and being helpful in other ways is enough. You don't need to save people's moods. You can't control them. But I think it's like a family instinct from my end of if there is tension, then it's like, make everyone smile and everything will be okay. And yeah, which is where a lot of, like, my wanting to be funny comes from. But
thanks. I was thinking of the meet cute post you post a lot on Insta, right?
I post a fair bit. I try to have, like, fun stories.
and I want to talk a little bit about that, because I really like this topic. I learned about the words meet cute, or word. I don't know if it's one word or two.
It's a hyphen. It's called a word.
During the stand-up workshop that happened at the beginning of September.
Oh yeah. That's true. You haven't heard it, right? Yes.
And so you talk about it, and I talked about it once, and then I replied. I was like, "Oh, let me know which bookshop." And I find it funny, and not a lot of people, I think, see things from that perspective or want to romanticize their life like that.
The Me Cute is kind of, it's almost a meme to me. It's almost like a joke, but the general approach to life, I've come to terms with the fact that over the years that I'm very dramatic. I'm very emotional. And I think for a very long time, I thought because I say things in a calm voice, I'm not. But like, I'm just being super dramatic while saying it calmly. So I'll just say, like, this right now is the worst day of my life. I will say something like that. And I get, and like, people who love me and know me will mock me a little bit for it. And it's like loving, but like, and at the time I mean it, but it's incredibly over the top and dramatic and emotional. And, you know, I like to feel things very intensely. And I think that that's also, I try to feel everyday life where I can as well. I try to really, been putting in a big active effort over the last 6 months to really like find beauty in boring stuff, and to find things that feel magical, even, and to not be apologetic about that. Because I think for a long time I would also be like, I know this is corny, I know this is cringe, I know this is a bit embarrassing, but like, and it is, don't get me wrong, I think I should be mocked for it, but like, I don't mind being mocked for it because it's real to me. It's like, you know, it's I enjoy living out my little romanticism poet fantasies of like looking at a tree for a long time. You know, I'm thinking like, oh, what does this mean, you know? And it's all a bit up my own ass, but it's nice, and I think I'm self-aware enough that I'm okay with it. Like, the worst thing I would want would be for people to think I was faking it. But yeah, I talk about it in my stand-up, but like, you've got to romanticize the boring. You've got to find things that are beautiful in your everyday life, because life is so boring. Like, largely, I don't know, I mean, like, it's, the everyday is so boring, you know? On a big picture, there's lots of drama, but really, most days are very similar to other days. Mm-hmm. Most days, nothing of importance happens. So, if you're someone that kind of lives for thrill, then you've got to look for it, you've got to find it. And this is a huge thing of sobriety as well. Because my big theory is that when you're drinking, you make boring stuff feel interesting. Mm-hmm. So you go to a really boring event, but you get a bit tipsy, mm-hmm. so it feels like it was interesting. Mm-hmm. You have the same conversations with the same people, but you're drunk, so it feels exciting. But really, if you zoom out, you're like, it's the same as the last Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's nothing. And that's not a bad thing, that it's repetitive. Like, life, you need it to be a bit repetitive for the special moments to feel special, but you've got to find some way of making it feel exciting. I think all my life is just trying to make shit feel exciting. That's all I care about. Comedy is just like thrill. It's just risk all the time.
What's your biggest fear?
I was asked this a lot over the summer, and a couple of people, it came up a couple of times, and the answer I've been saying, and you know, I mean, biggest fear, I don't know if it's number one, but a big one is being perceived as someone that I'm not.
Okay.
So I really, really hate feeling like everyone in the room thinks that I am a person that I don't think I am.
Mm-hmm.
I know that says a lot about my need to please everyone else, but like, I would say that's probably one of my biggest fears. What about you? Sorry, I'm making this very one-sided. I'm just monologuing, but it should be interacting.
No, it's totally fine. I wrote on Hinge that my biggest fear was boredom, and that's why I asked, because you were just talking about everyday life being boring and then romanticizing it, and this is exactly what I do too, so that's why I asked right now.
I think a year ago I would have agreed. I have a new thing about boredom where I think boredom's really, really healthy.
Yeah. For creativity.
Yeah, and I also think that we're never bored anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we're so constantly stimulated in modern world and in the internet era that I think that we've kind of... A lot of people have lost the positive sides of boredom, which is you have to be so bored that you're like, how do I make this fun? And then that's when you're a kid, that's when you invent the game. You know, that's when you have just two sticks, and out of those two sticks, you create a whole world. But if you have a phone, then you immediately, you stop yourself before you even get to the point that you would be bored enough to try to create something.
Yeah.
So I think boredom is essential, but I understand hating. I also hate being bored, but that's why it's good, because I think it, like, if you, in a healthy way, force yourself to not be bored.
Totally, but I think for me it was more, one of my dates picked up on it, and he was like, ooh, I feel some neuro spiciness in there, and I was like, oh my god, I feel so seen, because it's not like I'm bored and I need to constantly go hiking or whatever, never, but, but more, yeah, I need to create, I need to do things, and it's more that, and I also try to see the beauty in the mundane, but it's... I also need this drama. Not this drama in relationships, but this romanticizing.
Yeah. I think drama is always loaded as like a negative word, but I don't think it is necessary. I think it can just be like... Drama can be super positive. It can be like, wow, what a beautiful morning we're having. We just had great sex, now we're having a coffee together. Oh my god, that's dramatic, right?
Yeah.
But like, it's drama doesn't have to be, you want to sleep with my sister? How dare you? Know what I mean? Like, the drama can be positive. So, like, you know, if I go and I sit by the river this morning and I see a duck and I think, like, wow, look at that duck, that's kind of dramatic. Because, like, you could also just be like, it's a fucking dog. Who gives a shit? But I'm like, no, look, he's swimming after his lover, you know, and they're creating like a whole silly little narrative that's not. I was going to say it's not real. It is real because it's kind of true on some level, but it's not actually important. And that's what I think the drama comes in, just kind of feeling it fully. Yeah, but a hot take around that I would have as well is, this is why I think that like football or like watching team sports is really healthy, because it allows you to live dramatic emotions without real consequences. Like, if you genuinely care, like if my team loses, I am genuinely sad.
What's your team?
Arsenal. Come on, Gunners, we're going to win the league this year. We can make this a football podcast. I'm very happy to make this a football podcast. What do you think of Mikel Arteta? Do you think Bukayo Saka is gonna do it this season? Do you think he's gonna break the assists record?
This will be a monologue then.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I think that there's great value, and I think there's a reason that a lot of men are drawn to it. Is just that an excuse to feel intensely. But also when it's over, if their team doesn't win, of course there are sad versions of the people that can't separate this, but I think most people, when their team loses, then they feel sad, but they also know they're fine. They know that ultimately, of course they'd rather their team won, but it doesn't actually affect their lives negatively. And I think there's something nice about that, and I think it's the same with consuming art. You know, we all want to feel something. We all want to you know, why do we go to a horror movie? Because it's different. Nice to feel scared without the consequences of fear. You know, no one wants to actually be chased by a man with an axe, but you want to feel like you were for a moment and you got away with it.
Do you go watch horror movies?
Not hugely, but I don't really watch many movies anymore.
Why?
Combination of time and interest. I think I used to watch a lot more. Now I think I spend my free time differently. I mean, that's also a thing of getting older, is your time becomes so much more valuable to you. And now when I think of a movie, I think of, 2 hours, you know? I could be watching something else.
So what would you be doing instead?
Not something useful necessarily. I mean, sometimes it will be socializing. But I think also because I have showbiz hours, like, it feels weird to watch a movie at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
Like, that would probably be the time that I would most. Like, what I have done is sometimes when I'm on tour or traveling for comedy in general, if I have a free afternoon, I'll just go to a cinema and go watch something, because then it's quite like, it's a nice way to chill. But then I don't really care about the movie. Then I'm just kind of going to, like, sit inside in a comfy chair for 2 hours. And hopefully the movie's good. Maybe it's not.
So not cinema too much these days?
Not these days. I used to go a little bit more because my ex was really into movies. But I don't know. It's just not something I keep track of. Like, I follow mostly comedy stuff, football stuff, some music stuff. But yeah.
So what would you do for fun when you're not working on something or on stage? What do you do?
I mean, this is kind of a tricky question for me, to be honest, because, like, for better and for worse, the thing I find the most fun is my job.
That's cool.
Like, it is, but it's also annoying. It also means it's, you know, you create this imposter syndrome of your head of you're not doing work because it's enjoyable. Like, you are working. Like, when I'm doing comedy, I am working, but it's also the thing I love doing the most. So if I have a night off, I'm either, like, vegetable resting, so, like, I don't know, video games and trash and maybe some, like, takeaway, or I'm socializing with people that I don't see at comedy, or I'm just, like, wishing I was doing comedy, because I do enjoy it, you know. And most nights I want to perform if I get the chance, because I love doing it. I love the process. I think you need to if to do it as much as you need to do it to get good at this. I think you need to really, really want it.
Did you love it since the beginning? Like, in this way?
No. I think I loved the idea of it for a very long time. I think I loved the idea of appearing like a stand-up comedian for a very long time. I think I, in a bad way, cared about the status, and I only really started getting better and really enjoying it when I started letting that idea go of it being something cool or something impressive, and instead just focusing on enjoying it and the privilege of getting to do it. But also, when I started, I was deeply depressed. I was in a very bad place mentally for, like, the first 3-4 years of me doing comedy. So I needed to kind of get through that and get over that before I could really focus on the creative. Because, I mean, this is kind of a different topic, but it's related. Because I think, like, one of the biggest myths is the whole, like, tortured artist thing. I think it's complete bullshit. I think it's this thing that some people have decided at some point that, like, creativity comes from unhappiness, mm-hmm. and deeply I think it's so harmful. I think it's so bad. And I loved the idea. I mean, I said earlier, living my, you know, romantic poet fantasy. For a while, it was a tragic poet fantasy. Yeah. I loved the idea of being like, what if I'm like really, really, really funny, but also really sad? That's so cool. It's not. It's just sad. And you're not good at being creative because you can't follow through on anything. Yeah. When you're depressed, you're unreliable, you're useless, you're inconsistent, you're volatile. It's not healthy. It's not helpful to anyone. So my comedy started getting better when I started getting better. This is why I always like think that people have to prioritize their own well-being and then start thinking about their creativity, because it will follow naturally. I truly believe that. What do you think?
You don't think it helped you a little? Because I think creativity can be very healing as well. Well, I do. Mm-hmm. I do it all, right? I mm-hmm. do the yoga and the self-development and all these things. And I think also that 5 years ago when I tried stand-up for the first time, or more, I don't know how many years ago, it was also too much of a status thing and an ego trip. And now I just don't care. I know I care. Of course I care. Yeah. We all do. Yeah. But if it's not that, it's something else, you know, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you need the self-development stuff, the mental health stuff, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, I think creativity can help you get better.
For sure. For sure creativity can help you deal with difficult things and pain and mental struggles. But I think specifically the format of stand-up comedy...
Yeah, it's brutal.
It's also the fact that it has to be funny. Mm. I think if you really want to make art about your depression, like, you can make comedy, but especially at the beginning, you probably don't have the skill set yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of like trying to write a really, really beautiful symphony and you don't know what a C chord is. Mm. Like, sure, you can have the idea and like the intention, but if you don't have certain, let me put it this way, I think I'm now like 7 or 8 years into comedy, I forget the exact number, but I think now I would be, if I went through a really heavy depressive patch now I would be more capable to maybe make something from it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was beginning,
mm-hmm.
I was just unloading my sadness onto people, mm-hmm. and I just was trying to...
It was not processed.
No, not at all. Yeah. There's a phrase in comedy, and I don't 1,000% agree with it all the time,
mm-hmm.
but generally... it's people, audiences don't want to see open wounds, they want to see scars. So the idea being that if something is still too real, too raw, it's really hard to make it funny. It's really hard to, because like it's, if you're watching it, you're like, if you're not sure if the person on stage is okay,
yeah.
it's really hard to find them funny.
Mm-hmm.
Not because like you're mad at them, but because you're worried about them, because, you know, because... Most audiences are fundamentally very empathetic and they care about the performer. So I always try to live by that of... I try to talk about scars. I try to talk about things that I feel that I've processed and learned from. And that's, I think, much more healthy than... And I'll privately write about open wounds. But I won't try to make it funny, necessarily.
Because you also write about, you write poetry or essays.
Sure.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a bit.
I try to just consistently write something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's not. I try to not let myself be too constrained to a format, which is where like essays and poetry are great, because no one tells you this is how it has to be. Kind of just like, yeah, it's fucking, it's what I mean. You know, and I'm not doing it with any sense of I'm not submitting it to a publisher. You know, I'm not trying it. I'm not making it for public consumption. I'm just making it because I want to make it. Mm-hmm. And if public people enjoy it, cool. But comedy, I still would say I am making for people. Because, and also that's not a bad thing. Like, you should care about, like, if people have paid tickets to see a show, you should be trying to entertain them. You should consider it a job on some level of, you know, just because you're sad doesn't mean that the people who paid for a ticket to a show should be sad. Mm-hmm. Like, they paid for a ticket to a comedy show. They're here to laugh. The word comedy, everyone is coming because they want to have fun. Mm-hmm. No one's coming because they want to leave crying. If you can get them to both, cool. But, yeah.
Mastery.
Hmm?
Mastery.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Hmm.
Is that what's going to happen this Saturday? Friday?
No, I don't know. Saturday. It was Saturday. I'm recording my taping of my old hour. I don't think it's a cry thing. It has like a bit of an emotional thing about it because it's about my time in the mental health institution. I think mostly it's a pretty positive show. Without huge spoilers, it's largely just a show about, you know, choosing optimism and hope over defeatism and cynicism. I think it's very, very hard to stay hopeful all the time, but it's really important. You gotta believe that the future can be better. Otherwise, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, what's the point?
You know, otherwise, it's just all jump off a bridge. Yeah. Like, if you don't think that anything's ever gonna get better.
That's what gets me through also.
But also, you know, I can't speak for you, but for me, like, things have gotten better personally. You know, I'm a much more rounded and happier person now than I was 10 years ago. Just completely different. I barely even think of it as me 10 years, you know. I think of it as such a different existence.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think
it's nice to hear.
Yeah.
It gives maybe hope for other people who might be listening to that and who are not doing so well.
Yeah, I mean, it's all... Everything's temporary, the good and the bad. It's not even really a choice for me. It's like it's a necessity. I have to believe that there's going to be good stuff coming. I have to believe that, like, there's going to be things that I will find fulfilling. And
what would be next for you? It's usually a question I ask at the end, but maybe I'll ask it now.
Like, professional?
Do you have a dream? Anything. Because you're already
I've made it no secret that I want to take my show Slay Boy to Edinburgh Fringe. I would love to have a really successful run there. That'd be very cool. But I also don't want to put all my eggs in one basket. I want to have an open mind for where my career and where my life goes. It can go in many different ways. But if I'm someone, if I feel like I'm moving forward, I'm good. I don't need to know exactly what's at the end, but just general feeling of progress. And I do, every 6 months or so, I have like a big reflection of whether I think I'm better than I was 6 months ago. And the moment that I'm not, I'll get stressed. But I still, right now, as a performer, I think I'm better than I was 6 months ago. And as long as I'm moving forward, as long as I'm progressing, I'm happy. I'm a big believer in the journey is the goal. Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta love the process. You gotta love growing and changing and developing. It's very important.
Personally, or hobby-wise, or a trip, or...
I don't know. Personally, body stuff. I mean, we've talked about this offstage, but I'm trying to get more in tune with my body. I think if I personally would feel I don't know how I would mark it as now it's good. And I'm not, like, I'm very consciously not setting myself a specific weight or goal or strength level. It's not about that. It's about the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if I felt there is definitely a place that I could get to mentally where I'd feel way more comfortable in my body, and I'd love to feel confident in my dancing. I think that would be a huge moment for me if I felt like
the contemporary. Do you what kind of dance do you do?
I do various. I mean, I don't. There's a dance class that there's a dance school that has various different classes, and because my schedule is so irregular, I kind of just go with what's on in the afternoon that is open to beginners. Because so I've done ballet ones. They were hard.
Mm-hmm.
Not super fun. I don't think I'm going to do much of them.
Okay.
But the contemporary was fun. It's mostly contemporary stuff, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I don't really care about the definitions. For me, it's just doing something that's... I like something that has, like, steps that I can remember.
Mm.
And...
like a choreography.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we always do, like, a choreo.
Yeah, okay.
I would just love to be at a point that... I don't know, I've had too many situations in my life where everyone else was dancing and I got stressed that I was uncomfortable.
Okay.
You
don't go clubbing and dance in a club?
Not sober.
Yeah, so not sober.
Even when I would more, I would... it's a weird thing. I can funny dance.
Yeah.
I can be fun with... I can wedding dance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do, like, the silly moves. I can be goofy, have a good time, you know, camp it up. And if I'm doing it and it's clearly kind of a joke, it's fine. But the idea of sincerely, like, being like, this is not meant to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is not meant to be even fun. It's just meant to be an expression of with my body. That's terrifying to me. Whenever anybody, like, you get it occasionally when you do stand up that people will be like, wow, so brave, I could never do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm so like, that, like, do, words easy. The idea of dancing sincerely, honestly, vulnerably, that's terrifying. The idea of, like, genuinely trying your best. Because, like, you know, I'm also like a large, very unflexible man. For better and for worse, you know, that's got its advantages, don't get me wrong. I think so that would be a personal goal, is to feel comfortable dancing.
It's funny because Amber said on the podcast last time, singing for her is the new, most vulnerable thing she can do.
Ah, interesting.
Because she dances, right?
Sure. But she sings.
And she sings also. But
I guess she does funny songs as well.
Maybe
she's got a similar feeling there with, because she makes it funny, it's different.
Yeah, she takes singing classes and said, yeah, it's the most vulnerable thing. Cause, and I know what she meant. I took singing classes too, and yeah, it comes from deep.
I feel similarly with singing, to be fair.
Yeah.
For me, it's in a similar place with dancing. I think...
Mm.
I think I'd feel slightly more comfortable with singing because I, even though I've never had any classes, I know I have a naturally quite sonorous voice. Like, I've heard it from enough people, and I also have the same voice as my father, and my father is an excellent singer. He has training. I have nothing. So, and especially now that I don't smoke, it's much nicer. you should watch. Have you seen Sleigh Boy?
No.
Okay. I don't want to spoil things.
Is it what's happening this Saturday?
No. Saturday is the old show. It's Crocodile Cowboy 2022.
Okay.
Yes, I know that's an annoying name. Sleigh Boy is my new show that I want to take to fringe festivals and things. But
you're not. Are you performing? Yeah, you're performing it as well. No?
Not this Saturday, but in general, yes. This Saturday is just so that I have a professional recording of the old show, because there's a lot of jokes that I no longer really am going to be using, but I want to have it once on the record. This is the full show. I'm not going to make a huge deal of it, to be honest, but...
But I don't think it's going to be out by then, but maybe you can advertise the one in Zurich, the taping in Zurich.
Yeah, the tape. So we're taping it in two locations. I'm taking it in Basel here at The Beast, and then in Zurich at Comedy House on, I believe, the 14th of November. Maybe it's the 15th. You'll figure it out. You'll find it if you want to find it. it's not that hard. Yeah, that's going to be a bit bigger because it's a big venue, but it's those are probably the two venues... very, very different reasons that have meant the most to me in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Those two, and I guess Grenzwert Murder Mondays as well. But The Beast is kind of emotionally a continuation of Grenzwert.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's with Albert,
it's with the whole community.
Yeah. So they live in the same place, and then Comedy House is where I've had my biggest shows.
What was your biggest achievement stand-up wise, biggest achievement, but in the sense that when you did a first part or maybe your own show,
mm-hmm.
that you thought like, wow, that's a, I'm proud of that.
I have two answers, one which is a bit tongue-in-cheek. Quitting smoking. Because I did that with stand-up. It's hard to explain without spoiling all of Slay Boy. But Slay Boy is largely around slaying personal demons from my real life. And one of them was quitting smoking. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I smoked a pack a day for 13 years. I had kind of already resigned myself mentally to the idea that I was just a smoker forever. That was, you know, in a way, that was my biggest achievement from comedy, was being able to overcome something that I felt I never would be able to. Then the more real answer with, like, in terms of a show, there's a few that come to mind. Some comic strips.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show that Amber and I organized for a while. For those that don't know, it's like burlesque comedy and drag and clowns and variety. It was... there were a couple of those... I mean, there were loads that were great, but there were a couple specifically that felt like real breakthrough moments for me personally. Where there were bigger crowds than I was used to, but I still managed it well, and it was very affirming. And they were, some of the shows were in a good way super chaotic, like they very much leaned into me performing in a quite chaotic way, but that was, instead of rejected, that was embraced, and that felt quite affirming, of like, oh, I can just be that silly version of myself. So that was very freeing. And then later later as we were doing comic strip as well, then some of them that were just felt like really, really big, really professional productions, I was like, this is kind of, you always feel like you're the kid that's been given the adult suit, but those I was like, oh, we did that easily. That was amazing. That was genuinely fantastic. So I was very proud of those. I don't know, there's so many that come to mind. There's many other ones as well. Big shows that I did abroad, selling 230 tickets, like, for one show. That was crazy to me. That was huge for me as a organizer. Every show at The Beast, you know? Like, the whole... 5 years ago, Albert and I would talk about a comedy club in Basel as if it's something that might happen in 20 years. And to have it happen now, and to have the shows be as fun as they are and as full as they are, and to feel professional and good, and you know, it still feels like yesterday that would have been unimaginable. So every time, whether I'm involved or not, there's a show at the Beast that's successful, even though it's not my club, it's Albert's club, I just have a little hand in the vibes. That makes me super proud, you know. It's really great to have that happen in Basel.
He was sharing that you guys were talking about, it'd be so great if it'd be a Klickerkeller.
Yeah. We literally talked about how, like, it's crazy that we never used it. We tried to, like, it's perfect. And it's, you know, there's also the way that the and this is not just Albert or just me or anything, like, it's a community thing, but like 5 years ago there were maybe five people, maybe six. Mm-hmm. Now it feels like there's so many, and the quality is so much better as well. Like, we had Amber and Pau's show here the other night, and it was really inspiring to see, because it was also like two people that I've seen more or less from the beginning of their stand-up careers. I'd not taken credit for it, but like, I remember very, very early on, like, encouraging Pau a lot, especially, and Amber as well. I mean, like, and to see them both crush, like, in a split bill, it was really nice to be like, oh, wow, look at all this material they've been working on for years and years that I've had the privilege to watch them grow. So that's super inspiring to me, just like to see how good everyone is.
I asked you that, so the community thing. Yeah, I wanna really talk about that, because every sure. single comedian I've interviewed so far was like, "Oh, the community is so cool." Ivan was like, "The community is so cool," and you guys, when I interview you and I ask you about your vision and dreams and projects, you just talk about the community, and it's so beautiful, you know, to hear. And
oh, I have selfish visions too, but
but so I just want to say also, when I went to a Lux show in Zurich.
Oh yeah.
And then you did the first part. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. And when I saw you, because I know you from Basel, mm-hmm. you know, from the open mics, I was like, oh my god, this is so cool. And I didn't know you, you didn't know me. I think we were following each other on Instagram, but
yeah,
that's
it was a bit vaguely familiar.
And then I was so happy for you, even though I don't know you, you know, but and maybe for you this means nothing. And
very kind, it's very
No, but I mean, to have done the first part of Alok, for me it seemed like, wow.
Oh, it was huge.
So cool.
Yeah, it was really, no, it was awesome. Big shout out to Comedy Kiss for inviting me to be on. That was really awesome. I mean, that was the biggest crowd I've ever played. So that was like 1,000 people at Fogg's House. But you know what the best part of it was, in a way? The show was amazing. Alok was lovely. The whole experience was great. But the best part for me on a personal level was when the host announced that I was going to be opening. So he said, like, we have an act coming up before. His name's Teddy Hall. He's very good. We're very excited. And to hear, not like one or two people, but to hear, like, I couldn't put a number on it, but a solid amount of different people going, like, you could hear the positive, like, yeah, why? And like surprise, because I wasn't on the posters or anything like
yeah,
that,
you
right?
Were, yeah.
Maybe I was somewhere in the text somewhere,
the
email, but
yeah.
And that was really like, oh, that's so cool.
And he even said, because people were cheering all the time, and you were like, okay, guys, please don't cheer all the time, because I have a lot I want to actually talk about now. Do you remember that?
Honestly, no, but I enter an adrenaline rush when I'm on stage, and half the time don't know what I've said.
Because people were laughing all the time, you had to be like, please don't.
that's
awesome.
Probably being silly, but Yeah, no, that was a really cool experience. And it was very affirming as well to have such a positive reaction to it. And that was, I mean, that was a very cool month for me in general for comedy, because then it also opened for Gianmarco Soresi in Paris for 5 nights and then in Zurich for 1. And there, having the Zurich show was then the second biggest show I've ever done, because that was then 950 people. It was like just shy of 1,000, so obviously unimpressed. But like, it was a really cool month.
How does it feel to be on stage in front of so many people?
It's amazing. I mean, it's incredibly nerve-wracking. You know, because you want to do a good job, but you have to just trust your training. You know, there's a reason that you do all the other shows, so that when the big one comes, you're ready. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you just got to treat it mentally as it's just another gig. It's just the same.
Mm-hmm. Do you have rituals or something? Things you do?
Yeah, but they change. Right now, it's stretches. So right now, because I'm in my whole physical thing, but there's a clown school influence of trying to make sure my body's right. So I'm trying really hard to be standing straight when I'm performing, and to be not to be hiding physically. But I've gone through a million rituals, and I will go through a million more. I'm not someone that ever, as soon as something becomes a system, I get bored of it and I want to change it. So
not really.
Yeah, not really something that I would say this has always been the case. Mm-hmm. The stuff that's been like, there was a couple of years that I would sort of shadow box. So like when you fake punching into the air, just to get my blood flowing and to get my energy up. Mm-hmm. But now, there's also the shows and there's shows. Like there's ones where it's like, there's ones where I'm super comfortable just walking onto stage and starting to talk, and there's ones where I'm like, okay, I want to be mentally prepared because I want to start this in a very specific way. You know, like there's a big difference between, yeah, if I'm opening for 1,000 people, I'm going to prepare slightly differently to if I am doing 5 minutes at an open mic in the downstairs of a kebab place. Like, I have a different approach.
But you don't want to share because it changes.
I mean, it's not that I don't want to share. It's more just I keep trying new things. But I would say the most important one, it sounds stupid, but make sure I've had dinner. Mm. Every time I don't have dinner before a show, I'm like, why did that not go well? And then I remember I hadn't eaten. Every single time, and every single time I'm like, that should be your number one rule. And then every time, inevitably, a month later, I have a show, I'm in a bit of a rush, I'm like, ah, it's fine, I'll eat after, and it throws me off. Mm. So, always have dinner. Dinner's important.
No, it's funny, because Vanessa Lippin, she doesn't eat before shows.
Yeah, the comedians either all eat after or all eat before. It's very different for different people. But I think for me as well, it's because I'm on ADHD meds, suppress my appetite a bit. It's very easy for me to forget to eat until they've worn off, but I still need to. So I have to be quite vigilant about reminding myself to eat, which is annoying but fine.
Okay, so eating is a good one.
Yeah, that's my ritual. It's very innovative. Eating, breathing, sleeping, having a wank,
stretching.
All the important things.
Maybe then your creative process when you write or your creative...
I kind of going to have the same answer of as soon as I have...
Give me something!
No. As soon as I have a system, it stops working.
Okay.
So as soon as I feel like I've figured it out, that's when it stops working for me, because I find it boring. Because I enjoy the process of figuring out a new system.
Okay.
So I write all the time. I try to write as much as I possibly can. Everything. I have loads of different notebooks. And I try to... I'd say a big thing, if I was giving a tip, would be rewrite. So even if you know it off by heart, just write it down again by hand. Sometimes you'll come up with a new thing, and you'll find a new thing just by the process of writing it. But I don't have a specific creative process. It's more just, it's a shotgun, not a sniper rifle. You know, kind of just like, see what happens and then what sticks.
But I think you're so in it already that it's just like breathing to write. There's not, you don't have to ask yourself anymore.
I mean, I'm confident in my ability to make something have jokes and be fine. It's whether they're like good is different, but I'm confident in my ability to, if you give me an hour to come up with so and so many jokes about something, I can come up with jokes. They might not be amazing, but they're functional. They will get ha ha ha, you know. But really, stuff that really really hits, that's really in the heart, that's a bigger challenge.
And a process of maybe doing editing.
Redoing. Over and over and over.
Have you ever thought of quitting
comedy? No, not seriously, not even slightly seriously. I've thought about what comes after, but I'm nowhere near the end of my creative journey with it. So I've thought about a world where I'm done with it, but I'm not at that world yet. Like, I wouldn't quit before I've achieved certain things, certain milestones. But I can see a world where, I don't know, in X amount of years, I'm like, okay, I'm kind of done with this creatively. I want to do something different. But I'll cross that bridge when I get to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other creative project you would love to work on and you don't find the time to do so?
Clown. I mean, it kind of, I guess that is, in a way, quitting stand-up would be, like, that's the closest I've gotten to quitting stand-up, is, like, the idea of doing clowning completely instead.
Okay.
But that's still in the world of comedy, so wouldn't call it quitting. It's just more like, I'd call that progression. But I would love to, at some point, dedicate myself fully to clown performance.
Where did it come from?
I did one workshop with a lady called Elf Lyons, who's one of my favorite comedians in the world and one of my biggest inspirations. And from there, it kind of snowballed into me getting really into watching a lot of clowns, and a lot of people that I work with I thought really inspired me. And I don't know, there's something about clown performance that it gets to, I think a lot of stand-up comedy, it lives in the head, and clown is in the heart.
Why?
I think it's a lot harder to put into words why a clown thing is good.
I've never seen that, I think.
You probably have without realizing it was clown. So the famous example that everyone uses, Borat. Borat's clown.
Okay.
But like, specifically in regards to the way that he gets other people to be funny. Like, he's the weirdo, sure, but when you think of like the movie, the best bits are all the way people are reacting to him, rather than necessarily what he's saying. But I think that like a lot of clown stuff, you'll watch it and you're like, you're not sure why it was amazing, but it was, like, you felt it. There's something untouchable about it, undescribable. And like, whereas stand up I think can be very like, not all of it, but a lot of it can be very like, if you have the right words in the right order, it will work. And that's, you know, you still need to have heart in the writing and stuff, but
it's more scientific almost.
Maybe it's just that I understand it more, I personally, so therefore I'm always more interested in the thing I don't get. And I've been doing stand-up for long enough to, you know, I don't think I'm amazing, but like I feel like I understand broadly what works and why a lot of things work. Clown, I still haven't. I went to school for a month in France. I still don't really have a clue. It's all undefinable. Clowning feels much more like poetry, like where it's like this. You could write two descriptions of clown performances, and they could read almost the same. And one of them was great. One of them was terrible. But you don't really know why. It's just kind of to do with the performer. It's all very connection based. Yeah.
Magical.
Quite magical. I find it quite magical. And maybe when I get good at it, I will also be over it. Because then I understand it. Mm-hmm. But that's a me problem. Again, I like figuring things out. I don't like having them figured out.
Did you ever do a normal job?
I was a bartender for a lot of years. I bartended a lot. I'm good at bartending. And I was, for 6 months, I was a customer service representative for a contact lens company. And I wanted to die.
Yeah. I was going to say fun.
No, it was awful. I can't stand office culture and the idea of ever working in an office again. If I were to quit the arts, I would be way more likely to go into bartending again full time. Or maybe in sobriety it would be more like cafeing, yeah, more barista than bartender. But yeah, I'd do that for the rest of my life before I'd sit in an office for a week. I don't know, it's just so depressing. I don't want to bum people out that work in offices, but I just got such...
They know.
I got such anxiety the whole time.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was just so desperate to get out, and it all felt pointless. It all felt like, why are we doing this? None of this is useful. You're just trying to give me a job. I have to be here from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. Mm. It doesn't matter if I'm good. Mm. If I do my job well, and I'm really fast... then I'm just done at 2 p.m. and I get a new job till 5. There's no sense of reward for doing well. It was just like, if I do my job slowly, I'm still there till 5, so why try? But it was 6 months and I was also depressed in general, so I don't know. I'm sure there are offices that are nicer experiences, but it's just not for me.
Yeah, I get it. Maybe we can talk about this essay you published last week.
Sure.
And it was a bit of a rant.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, I wrote a video essay that I initially was going to film and make as like a long form thing about trying to be a creative on the internet, and specifically comedy. And the reels and TikToks of it all, and just kind of how much it saddens me, but also I have to take part, and like how that that clash. It was a long essay, so I'm summing up very short. But,
I think
yeah.
There were some sentences that I wanted to. Do you want to read it? For those who haven't read it?
I don't know if I want to read it out, but if you just tell me... Why don't you... No, could I... You tell me which sentence, and you read it out, and I don't know, it feels weird for me to... But,
to read your own essay that you wanted to put in a video anyway?
But it feels strange to go into, performance, reading voice. What's the sentence you would love to talk about?
I hate that I live in this glass house. I feel trapped by it because I don't know how else I can reach people, how I can distribute my art. I feel caught in a rat race with other comedians that also hate the fact that we're racing. every time I make another little reel, I feel like I'm gifting my art to to fascist kingmakers as free potential advertising. The reason why I screenshotted that is because I wanted to quit Instagram a few weeks ago as mm-hmm. well, because it's so addictive and mm-hmm. I'm on it so much, just mm-hmm. doom scrolling.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's made that way, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, I can't, because I'm also advertising for my own things on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand this feeling of being trapped.
Yeah. I mean, what's frustrating is I don't know what the alternative is. You know, I don't know what I could do. And part of that is also, part of it is that I'm not in an industry where there is like an alternative route right now. Like while doing comedy in mainland Europe, there's just not really alternatives. There's not really an alternative path than social media.
What's the difference between mainland Europe and is it, where would it be?
Well, like the UK would have comedy agents and industry that you could, like the UK or the US, where you can hypothetically be like, there are gatekeepers, and that's not just a good thing. Quite the opposite, right? There's a lot of downsides to that. Mm-hmm. But there are people that will say, this is someone who is good, we hire them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to do with necessarily their follower account, that's just based on their performance. Whereas I think, if I'm being a realist, for me to be able to sell tickets, if I'm selling my own tickets, if I'm producing my own shows, I need to have a degree of social media presence.
Mm-hmm.
For me to do, you need to be able to find things. It's just a fact of the modern age of being an artist. Is you like, if people can't find you, they're not going to come to your shows,
yeah.
Right? And you know, we have the comedy club here now, but it's been 6 months. It's still, or maybe a bit longer, but it's still a baby. It's mm-hmm. it's not like we could just have. Be like, oh, I just do the shows here.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I hate that I have to do it. And I hate that I feel guilty doing it, because I feel like I'm, by participating in it, I'm also supporting it. You know? The more that I post, like, let's say I have something that does really well online. Let's say I suddenly go mega viral. Even multiple things, and it all goes amazingly. It's not just me that's benefiting off that. It's also like genuinely Mark Zuckerberg and all the weird lizard people that are running it, where like, because they're now getting free content that they can run advertising on. And I hate that I'm contributing to that. I hate that I mean, there's so many reasons to find Instagram depressing. I think, like, without getting into the details of it, like, genocide, you know, need I say more? there's so many things that are fucking sad about it, and it's ruining people, and I don't want to be making stuff that makes people want to go on. Like, I wish for all my followers that they quit Instagram. But also I need them to follow me, so I feel like a hypocrite. And it's really frustrating because I don't know what else I could do. I don't know what, like, the other plan is. There's not even a competing social media. I mean, maybe TikTok, but it's the same. It's the same shit, right? Like, there's not even, like, another social media thing I could really turn to that's, like, this is the ethical one.
Substack.
Yeah, but that's never going to be, like, people don't use it like that,
yeah.
And that's just a fact,
yeah.
It's just, you know, you can have your thing there and it's cool, but it has its limitations, and until you have a big enough, you kind of have to have a big enough following,
yeah,
to be able to not need it,
yeah.
Like, sure, the biggest comedians in the world, like some of my idols, like Bo Burnham, sure, he doesn't need to post, but he's fucking Bo Burnham. he's, you know, if he chooses to, he can drop a special tomorrow and everyone's watching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Bo Burnham. You know, I have to have it on some level. I have to be while I'm building. You know, so
yeah.
I want to find an alternative. And I also think with the rise of AI, it's all just getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be making stuff for Instagram, but I also have to be making stuff
mm-hmm.
for Instagram.
But don't you find it a little bit fun?
Sometimes. I do. I enjoy some of the videos I make, though. Absolutely. But I wish I could be publishing them somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was another way that was realistic, that I could be making them for the fun of making them,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't have the constraints of Instagram, like, for example, everything has to have subtitles, everything has to have a hook, everything has to have the right hashtags, everything has to be done in certain ways. I don't want to be a part of it, really. I would like to make this was part of the idea of the video essay, was to make something that's not algorithm friendly, just for me. I ended up not doing it for different reasons. It was just, I don't know, I got more excited by other projects, and I was just like, I didn't want to just throw away the text.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me just put it up, and if people want to read it, they can. So, but yeah, I don't know. Social media is fucking ruining us all.
Yeah.
Well, I know that's not like a fun
thing
to say.
No, but I totally get it, and I also don't know what else to do, but I also find it fun, you know? So
yeah,
I have this conflict where it's
of course
like,
it's fun. I mean, like, it's designed to be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
But to create content on it, not just consume, to create content.
Sure.
Because it's
but, like, what you're finding fun is not to do with Instagram, it's to do with being creative and making stuff, you know? And the fact that you have to do it through Instagram, like, I'm sure that you would still... have fun making it for something else.
Yeah, I also I write I do this podcast, right? And then it's on Spotify. But then I share it on Insta, of course. Then I write on my blog and then I have all these silly stories and it is very fun. It's very quick and it's self-expression, I find. That's the quickest self-expression form me.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I also I very much in the video essay. I don't hate the players. I hate the game. Like, it's really like I totally get everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone's both as consumer and creator.
Mm-hmm.
I get why it's fun. I get why you make stuff. I get why you consume stuff. I also understand why in the modern age people don't want to just like people need it to be short because their attention spans are so fucked. I don't blame anyone individually, I mean, apart from like the billionaire overlords, but it's just there's got to be another way. And I feel like I'm not alone as well, that I'm reaching a breaking point. Everyone's reaching a breaking point. I think AI has really made everyone be like, oh, this is going bad. Like,
yeah, but you were talking about AI in videos. I don't use that. There is AI on every one of our apps, right? But I don't use it.
Yeah, but I think loads of people do. I mean, I think the amount of people that I think of as normal and reasonable people that use ChatGPT all the time. Yeah,
I just use it for German translations. And
I get it. Yeah, and like that's like, and I'm not. I use it for German emails.
Yeah,
but like people that will use it in a way that I'm like comedians will use it to make their posters, and I'm like, you're a creative. What are you doing? Like, of all people, we as artists should be like, hey, it matters that it's made by a human.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
I agree, yeah.
It's one thing if it's like, you know, if it does your taxes.
Yeah.
You know, that would be great.
The boring stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one thing if it writes your email to book a dentist appointment. But when it's like, hey, here's my art, and it's presented through AI, it's like, this is depressing as hell. And also, I don't know about you, but I'm more and more getting adverts that are done by AI. Like videos that are like about mental health.
I don't know if I can see the difference. Can you see the difference?
Yeah. Like the cartoony ads, and then there's like some kind of song or like voiceover that's like clearly a robot, and they'll be like, depression and loneliness is a killer in men, or like whatever. I get a lot of these. I wonder why. like I get a lot of like BetterHelp ads that are just AI generated, and you could just tell. Mm. I think, and if you can't tell, it's even scarier.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's fun and it's cheerful. It's the end of the world, but. I don't know. I hope that there's going to be some kind of backlash where it swings back towards being more offline. And I do feel, at least in my circles, that's happening. More and more people are like, fuck the online shit and get offline and talk to people and be a human.
Yeah.
Today I was
at a cool kino, and everybody, and I'm the same, had their headphones in, mm-hmm. and they were having lunch by themselves with the headphones. Mm. And I was like, yeah, that's the world we live in. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the headphones is a big one as well, where I've been trying very actively to not wear my headphones as much as possible. I mean, I still do sometimes, and for my podcasts and whatnot, but like I've tried to be a lot more conscious of, like, if I'm listening to music, I'm choosing to listen to the music rather than just having it playing in my headphones because I want to not hear the noise of society. or worse, not hear my own thoughts. I hate that I use a podcast to fall asleep. I hate that. That's, can I not just hear my thoughts for the 15 minutes or so it takes me to fall asleep? So I don't know. I want to stop that. I'm trying, but it's so hard. Yeah, I mean, that's so easy to say.
Analog?
Sure, that would be cool.
On paper?
Yeah, I'm trying as well. I mean, it's all, I think everyone agrees that it's bad, but everyone's so
in it
that everyone kind of doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. It's all the time. You know, I go out every day for 1 hour without my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. That shouldn't be hard.
I don't even do that. Yeah.
It's sincerely difficult. Yeah. But like, even if it's just to go do errands,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes I'll just go sit on a bench.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll go and I'll try to write. I have a puzzle book that I do now. Have it with me.
A puzzle book.
Yeah, like Sudokus and crosswords and different like other old man shit.
Mm-hmm.
but it's just to have a thing that I'm doing that's not with headphones. It's not with my phone.
Yeah.
It's analog.
What do your friends do?
To get off their phones.
Mm-hmm.
Some people work out a lot. Some people... It depends though, right? Because like... I know people who have like... brick phones. You know what I mean? Like old ones. And they just don't...
You know people who have...
Yeah, they don't have a smartphone anymore. But like... That's fine... if you're not working in the public eye.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't. It's not
enough.
You
could, but you would have...
I would make so much of my life so much harder.
Mm.
I would miss out on business opportunities. I would miss out on ticket sales. I would directly lose money that I need. I'm not in a position where I'm making enough money that I can say, let me make less. I'm not. I just about pay my rent each month, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I need everything, every little bit I can get. And, you know, the big irony is, you know, you only read that video essay because I posted it on Instagram. And I posted it on Instagram and someone was kind enough to donate $80 to me because they liked it.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. But it only happened because I posted it on social media. You know? And, like, that's great, but that's a great example for how that directly affects. If I'm not posting it,
yeah,
that's 80 francs I don't have.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think it's great to do more analog things, you know? I think it's
trying to find other things to do. So I try to be in nature a lot. I try to write a lot. I try to... When I encounter small talk situations, I try to not approach them with "fuck, when can I get back to my headphones?" but really just try to be in the moment.
Do you have those in Switzerland?
Rarely, but every now and then, I think. And it's like small moments, you know. But it's just like, I don't know, it's looking the shopkeeper in the eyes and saying thank you, or if something happens, doing like a "oop" with your face, like a little reaction. Like this morning, I was in the cafe, the guy asked me where to get napkins, and I pointed, and then when he got them and when he came back, I gave him a big thumbs up and he smiled, and it was like a nice moment, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't, we didn't get chatting, I don't know, I'll probably never see him again.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But
no, that's great.
To embrace those moments of like tiny connection.
That's great for a meet cute, you know.
Ideally, yeah.
You know,
ideally.
With headphones, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. No, absolutely not.
Never wearing those headphones again.
Well, you got to be open to it, you know? You got to give yourself the opportunity. And if I've got headphones on, then I want it to be because I'm like, I really want to listen to this song.
Mm.
And this would fit right here, right now, perfectly. And not shuffle.
Mm.
Fuck shuffle. Choose what you're listening to. Embrace it. Like, enjoy it. Like, I might listen to stuff while walking, but then I'm like, what's the soundtrack for this walk? Rather than, like, oh, I'll just play something.
Doesn't it make you feel like you're in a movie when
you're
listening to music?
Yeah, absolutely.
And walking down the street?
The right songs? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love having especially if I'm angry. Oh.
Mm.
Oh, putting on some like angry rap when I'm mad. Oh, it's the best. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share?
Oh. No, not really. I don't know. I think I'm good. Anything you want to share?
About life?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Many things, but I did solo episodes for that, so people can go listen to those.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, this was lovely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming, and thank you for listening, everyone.
Yeah, take care.